The Off the Ball Podcast Network. Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.
Now, delighted to welcome Trevor Ringland to studio. He was with us via Skype a couple of months ago and we had a really interesting chat. I know a lot of you really enjoyed it, so it's great to have him with us today. He is president, as you may or may not know, of the Irish Universities Rugby Union, sponsored and supported by Maxol for the last 28 years. And we're delighted to have you in studio. So you want to give this a plug and support this, and University Rugby is still alive and well.
Yes, University is very much alive and well. And with the tremendous support we've got from Maxol, and it's now their 100th year, it's still a family firm. The fourth generation of the families are still involved.
Is that right? Usually the third generation mucks it up.
Yeah, no, they've managed to keep it going, and there's no sign of them in any way diminishing what they're achieving. And what's great is that they're involved with university sport and university rugby in particular. They also look after grassroots rugby in other areas like Skerries and Carrickfergus, and I think Greystones as well. But they look at the investment that you make into our young people and bringing out the best in them, and they see that as a worthwhile contribution to society. And certainly we very much appreciate the support they give us, not only in financial terms, but also generally in highlighting and profiling the game. And they have Jacob Stockdale as their current ambassador. And
he's done all right.
He's done okay. And we certainly hope that he's going to have a great season from here on in, both for Ulster and for Ireland. But Maxol, it is brilliant. They take a very active interest in the Irish universities, and we are about trying to bring out the best in our young talent across this island. And also, I think, importantly, about creating connections between young people at university level as well across the island, and they'll take that into the future, and the whole island will benefit from that.
Well, indeed, and the whole island and people connecting with each other and focusing more on what we have in common than the few things that divide us, I know is a real passion of yours, has been a lifelong passion of yours.
Well, it really comes from my background, and I suppose really it was a particular time that my friend Hugo McNeilan contacted me when the IRA ceasefire broke down, and he said, what about we organise a peace match to show that the people of Ireland do not want this violence done in their name? And so as part of that, we said it has to be more than everybody wanting peace. There are consequences to not having peace. And in that vein, we asked a couple of young people to come onto the pitch with us before the game. And it was an Irish team against some of the best players in the world. And one young fella was 11 years of age. He'd lost his mother, father and sister in a Shankill bomb carried out by the IRA. Another young guy had, in retaliation for the IRA bomb, loyalists shot up a bar in Greysteel. And lovely families, and there's another young fellow who lost his best friend in a bomb in England, where Tim Parry was murdered. And I suppose I looked at it after that and I said, what would make a difference? What could we do? Because these are lovely families, and the tragedy that was handed on to them was terrible. How can we make sure it never happens again? And I looked at sport, and I looked at the example that rugby showed about how you build relationships, you look to create a bond between you, a bond of friendship that actually works together in many different ways so that you all do well. And I remain convinced that that's the way forward for this island, that we build relationships. Even if constitutionally we remain apart, there's no reason why we can't in effect have a united people. And that'll happen with the Irish rugby team in a couple of weeks' time. It'll bring the Irish people together and shout in with one voice as we take on the other nations. So
it was such a strong example, the Irish rugby team, in your day, because of what was going on generally.
It was, and despite all the madness that was going on, we managed to keep that link across the island, and I think it's one of the examples that while people were destroying relationships and destroying lives, there were others constantly working away to build those relationships and maintain those relationships. And that's really what won out in the end. And I come from a police family, and all I ever experienced was friendship. My father travelled to many different parts of this island, and all he ever experienced was friendship. And when politics takes to the streets, policemen die, and certainly it's very important to me that we ensure that politics never ever takes to the streets again, whether it be the police family in Northern Ireland or the police family across this island. And rugby just showed that different way, because we had guys who were in the police playing for Ireland at that time, we had guys in the army playing for Ireland at that time, and we had members of the Garda becoming personal friends of those guys, and they were prepared to put their lives on the line to protect them. And
yeah.
And that's the sort of foundations we want to build the future on. And Irish Universities is a good example of that, where we have the Dudley Cup, the Maxwell Dudley Cup. We are going to have the biggest women's tournament, the Maxwell K. Bowen tournament, in a couple of weeks' time. And it's just, it's brilliant when you see all those young people coming together and enjoying themselves.
Because I always loved the quote you gave to Donald McRae maybe a year or so ago. He was writing about, I think, Ireland's call generally. And I suppose this is the general point here is that extremists want to simplify our identity. Yes. We're all very complex. Yes. We're all multifaceted. Absolutely. And extremists want to say, you're black, you're white, let's go at it. Yeah. Simple division.
Yeah.
And you told Donald McRae, I'm a Belfast man, I'm an Ulster man, I'm British and I'm Irish, I'm Northern Irish, I'm European, I'm a long-suffering Leeds United supporter. Our condolences. These identities are interchangeable.
Yeah.
And anyone who demeans any one part demeans me as a person. A multi-layered identity challenges the extremists. Is Northern Ireland increasingly a place where there are more multi-layered identities, where people from different sections of society are marrying? Because obviously politics, it feels like over the last 2, 3, 4 years has been more polarised. It has felt from afar.
Yes.
What about the people? What about life?
Well, I think if you focus on politics, and the political commentators tend to do that, and then you think the place is more polarised. But actually go out and focus on the people, you'll see that the people are less polarised and are more up for better and normal relationships in all sorts of different ways. We have children, I'm involved in an organisation called Peace Players, and we bring children from the interfaces together and they play sport together. We use the game of three halves, which is rugby, football and Gaelic, with Ulster Rugby, the Irish Football Association and Ulster GAA supporting it. And the fourth half being community relations. And we bring kids from the interfaces, from the most difficult areas, coming to play sport. And I remember years ago when we were involved in it, a loyalist paramilitary said to me, Trevor, he says, I don't want a relationship with those people. There's too much history. And I said, Jim, I'm disappointed in that. He said, but Trevor, I want my children to have one. Oh. And he knew that what he'd been through, he didn't want to pass on to his children. And I think our young people nowadays are getting on with their lives.
They move
between fluid identities.
They must be less burdened. You know, Rory McIlroy did an interview a couple of years ago with Paul Kimmage, and I always thought he was the face of the new Northern Ireland. Mm-hmm. I mean, when he talked about his identity, he loved Ulster rugby.
Yeah.
He had played at Carton House growing up. I mean, Man United is as important to his identity
Absolutely.
As anything. And I really got a sense he did not want to get into, what side am I on? They're like,
we don't want to pass that baggage on to them.
No.
Because it shouldn't have happened. And it did happen. We have to deal with the outworkings of it. But my generation, we took some hard decisions in 1998 in the agreement. Mm. And we said, right, this is a new way forward for the whole island. The conflict happened. We have to work through the damage that causes.
Trauma.
It's trauma. It's understandable too, because many people were left with terrible tragedy happening to them. And there are terrible stories. And I'm very conscious of that. Mm-hmm. But the best way we can repay them, really, for what I would call grace that they've shown, because you hear loud voices being responded to of tragedies. But what you don't hear is the many quiet voices that don't speak up, who allow the space to be opened up for politics to start to work more constructively and relationships start to be built. And so we owe it to them to make sure it never happens again. And rugby is one example of how to do it. I think the way forward is to make Northern Ireland work socially and economically. And whatever your constitutional preference, you have to make the place that we share work.
Mm.
And part of that is making the whole island work, both socially and economically, and the relationship between these islands. And yes, we have Brexit, but we're going to work out that relationship, that new relationship with the European Union. Mm-hmm. But we're not leaving Europe. We're going to still be very a fundamental part of Europe. And we're still going to take our holidays there, and we're still going to have people from Europe coming to Northern Ireland and elsewhere in the UK. And the challenge is that how do we make sure we don't let those old voices come to the fore again and actually divide us? And our politics, there's a two-hour explanation, which I'm sure, Joe, you don't want me to give as to why we've ended up with our politics in the way it is. But in some ways, it's been the two governments wanting a quiet life and not really challenging the extremes in the way that they should have been challenged.
Right.
And that's the way it is, and we have to work through that. And hopefully they're going to change their politics. I know young people in the two more extreme parties, the DUP and Sinn Féin, and I see young people join those parties that they are less ideologically driven. Mm.
And if anything, my sense of the younger generation is they're more concerned with social progress.
Yes.
They're more concerned with issues like abortion and
Absolutely.
Same-sex marriage.
Absolutely.
That is what they seem to be talking about far more.
They are, and those are the issues. We have mental health issues that is much talked around about in all countries, but we have major problems there in Northern Ireland. And those are the sort of issues that our young people want to get into. And the religious aspect is less important to them.
Mm.
And I see regularly our young people really not caring about those issues that previously people had used to divide us. And also, if people do try to divide them, they're not responding. So our society is less polarized. And as I say, the challenge is how do the people depolarize the politics before the politicians again try to polarize the people. And that's an ongoing debate. But it would be incredibly stupid to
yes.
ever let things go back to the way it was.
It would. If you're just tuning in and you're wondering, is this Off the Ball or some kind of politics show, we are talking with Trevor Ringland, who played for Ireland between 1981 and 1988. He won 31 caps for Ireland. He played for the British and Irish Lions in 1983. Were you a worried man over the last couple of years? With obviously talk of a border was frightening to everybody on a host of different levels. But have you been actively worried over the last couple of years?
I think I've been concerned because people have been pressing buttons and expressing views, which really they were quite reckless in some of their language. And in one interview that myself and another friend whose father had been a policeman, he's a minister, and we were both interviewed, and we just said it's careless, some of this language around the border, saying that just because somebody stuck a camera up on the border would somehow justify somebody resorting to violence. And you're overstating your case here.
Mm.
And you know, we'll work through whatever requirements are made in regards to the whole Brexit debate, but there's nothing there that's going to justify the use of violence on any side.
Mm.
And
well, I guess the worry wasn't that it would be justified violence, but that it would be consequential.
But from my background, it was in some way saying that violence was justified in the first place.
Mm.
And I think that as we look back on the outworkings of that, you know, it happened, and you can explain why it happened, but it doesn't mean it was ever justified or it was ever going to further a constitutional preference.
No, and it would be as futile as ever.
It would, and as I say, that there were constantly through all those times, there were other people who were actually maintaining those relationships and building those relationships, and it always acted a counter to the violence in Northern Ireland, and you don't recognize that to some extent. Like I was talking to a friend earlier who's involved with the peace people in the 1970s,
mm-hmm.
and you had thousands of people taking to the streets across Northern Ireland saying, we want the violence to stop. And yet, what strikes me about that period was you had politicians who couldn't use that energy that those thousands of people were bringing, couldn't bring themselves to use that energy to actually bring the violence to a halt.
Why not?
I think sometimes I think it's the politicians are the biggest problem. And I may be being unfair on some of them, but I'm not being unfair on some of the others.
Mm.
I think it's their hang-ups sometimes that they put onto the people rather than the people putting their hang-ups onto the politicians.
Mm.
And I think what we need in Northern Ireland is good leadership coming through. And there are those in the various parties that are, I think, can do that and have the capacity to do that. And so the next decade has to be about that starting to emerge. Make Northern Ireland work, great relations across the island and between these islands, and it's not difficult, and we'll all do well socially and economically.
Which ultimately for most people is the most important thing. They've got families, they want to just have a quiet sure. life and a good life. And for you as a multi-layered identity, somebody who's played rugby for Ireland very proudly and been there when Aaron Levein rings out and your RUC father in the crowd cheering you on,
yeah.
Protestant and obvious, a certain side of the argument, that one argument, does the idea of a united Ireland in the next decade fill you with dread, fear, worry that it could destabilise the whole thing?
I think in the next decade it would. It absolutely would, because I don't think we'd have built the necessary relationships to make that a sensible transition, if that was the way of putting it. my argument is let's build relationships for 30 years and let that generation then, having built the sort of relationships any successful society should have, let them take that decision. Mm. But in the intervening period, let's make this part of the world work, whether it be Northern Ireland or Ireland. You know, we are good people right across the island. We have a beautiful part of the world. We're very lucky to live in it. And there's plenty of people who are looking to promote things in a different way. And we even had a 16-year-old girl from Cork, from Fitzgerald, from Cork, and she came up with the concept of friendship is bigger than borders, and organised some of her friends that travelled from Cork up to Derry and created a situation where they reached the hand across the border. And
but you know, it's funny, so I'm 34 now. The first time I was ever in Northern Ireland was the 2012 Irish Open for work.
Yeah.
It almost just didn't occur to lots of us even to go up there, even post 98.
It's a beautiful part of the world.
It's
you
stunning.
Look at the Irish,
yeah.
You look at the British Open, you know, this year, you know. And you had Shane Lowry walking down the 18th.
Yes,
and
cheered on.
Uniting the people of Ireland. The welcome he got, the support he got.
Yeah.
He was representing all of us on that occasion, and we were just so delighted that he had succeeded.
And wasn't it very telling in the midst of, at that time, things felt very difficult and very tetchy politically, you know, where the Brexit thing was and what was going on or not going on at the Northern Assembly. And it was so striking that the GAA man from Offaly was at Royal Portrush being cheered on by everyone.
By everyone. And the very last event in Stormont 3 years ago when it closed its doors was a Peace Players event where we had kids, teenagers from across the interfaces, the divide in Belfast.
Mm.
And they came together and they'd taken part in a 6-week course where they built the sort of relationships and got some qualifications that they could use for their future careers. And we had a DUP minister and a Sinn Féin minister giving them the certificates and their parents were there. And I said to one political journalist on the way in, I said, do you want to come in and see something positive? And he said he didn't have time. And I walked in and the kids had a ball. And they walked out, and I walked the last person out that night at 9 o'clock. And I said to myself, I wonder when these doors will open again. And what we showed, and what is constantly showed, not just by us, but by a whole lot of other organizations, is what's actually possible. That these barriers that people put up can be broken down, that relationships that people say can't be built can be built. And what we do need is some political leadership, and it is the political leadership on this island that is lacking. That, and as I say, even if constitutionally we remain apart, that there's no reason why, as a people, we can't be together in so many different ways.
Yes.
And, you know, I love the rivalry with Ulster and Leinster and Munster and Connacht. I also love it when they come together and they take on England, Scotland and Wales. I have two English brother-in-laws. I now have an English grandson, Paddy MacDonald.
Congratulations.
He's called Patrick. He's about 5 weeks old.
Oh, great.
And my daughter and her husband called him Patrick, and my father said, well, he's going to be called Paddy anyway, so he might as well. and you know, those the rivalries, we join up then for the British and Irish Lions, for example, and you know, take on the Southern Hemisphere. It's not hard stuff.
No.
But it just makes so much more sense than the other way.
You're a solicitor by trade.
Yes.
You love the law?
I do. I think the law is very important.
Why did you go into it?
Well, my father was a police officer, my grandfather was a police officer, and I suppose I had that legal leaning. And I went to Queen's University, and where I did my law degree, and I suppose I naturally flowed into that.
Okay.
But the law, in so many ways, actually does play a very important role in our society.
Does it? Because I was wondering if, in any respect, you felt slightly frustrated or hemmed in, because it would strike me, and I suppose a lot of people listening to you, that politics really should be your natural calling. And I know you were involved and stepped away ultimately, but listening to you, I would think, well, this man should be in Stormont more so than in a solicitor's office. But obviously, you're finding some level of fulfilment in that.
Well, I did stand in 2010, and I probably would have followed it through Westminster election. I didn't succeed, but I got enough votes in East Belfast that I probably would have got elected for the Assembly. But I had a hearing problem, and that window of opportunity that my wife had given me sort of closed. And at that time, I thought I was going deaf, and
did
I didn't
really?
Realize I was told I couldn't have operations. And I subsequently was able to get them, as you can see, and I think great credit to my surgeon and the National Health Service that we have. They were brilliant.
That's a stark moment.
When I woke from the first operation, yeah. I came round in recovery, and I had stood for election. My first words were, more pay for nurses. So I reckon that the nurses were feeding into me during
subconsciously,
the
operation. Overnight, play it to them. Just a brief tangent, that's a stark thing to face losing your hearing.
Well, it was, but it was just it was the way it was, and but it was incredibly frustrating. But my hearing's at a level that it works fine, but it does struggle. If somebody was to whisper something to me, so a window of opportunity was there. I have deep interest in politics, but I think I feel I can achieve more outside of it. But I would certainly want to keep a very active interest in it and support those who want to play a constructive role in politics. In Northern Ireland, whether it be the likes of Claire Hanna or Steve Aiken, or it was, you know, the DUP, young Alistair Ross left the DUP. It was a pity. He's the sort of person you want involved. But you do see young people and you want to support them in the work that they're doing, because politics exists and you have to take an active interest in it and make sure it remains to play a constructive role in our lives. So I would certainly take an active interest in it, and I hope the Northern Ireland I promote is one for everyone, and it is about good relations, east, west, and north, south.
And what in the main do you do legally at work as a solicitor?
Involved in the spread of work, which is, could involve litigation plus other aspects of work. And I'm involved in a few other organisations, such as Peace Players. And I've been very privileged to be asked to be president of the Irish Universities, and a better bunch of people you couldn't meet, and it reminded me back to my university days, and we had great relations with, between the rivalries between the universities. The what's now the Maxwell Dudley Cup, the Dudley Cup in those days really was a great opportunity to get together with them. There's a golden rule which I think we should apply not just in rugby but across all sport, which my friend Keith Crossan, who played on the wing for Ireland when I was playing, he says, after every match, you should buy your opposite number a drink, and he will buy you, or he or she will buy you one back. And during that period of half an hour, you build the sort of relationships that stay with you throughout your life. And I think it's something in sport we've allowed a wee bit too much elitism to come into it, and that doesn't happen to the extent it certainly happened in our day in rugby. But it's something that you shouldn't let go of, because you do have, I can walk into rugby clubs now 40, 50 years later, not having seen people, or 40 years later, and they immediately have a connection because of those times you spent with them 40 years ago. And that's invaluable in all sorts of ways.
Where is the club game at the moment?
The club game is, I think, it has to look to the future. The professional game, the elite game, I think will take care of itself. And I think that we certainly don't want to go down an American route where you have schools, colleges, and a professional game and no sort of club structure. I think keeping our young people active, keeping our young people engaged in the sense of community that clubs bring. If you take the likes of every club having a mini rugby team, having youth teams, having young people involved in the senior teams, and then you have some old people playing in the other lower teams. Even well into their 50s and some even into their 60s. And the influence that brings, the growth in women's rugby, which is fantastic, young girls getting an opportunity to play sport actively. I think women's rugby, the growth of it is great. It's great to see in the game. And I watched the Women's World Cup in when it was up in Ravenhill and or Kingspan. And it was a fantastic event. And I really enjoyed the rugby as well. It really was good and competitive. So the benefits that flow out of the sort of the club games that we have, the amateur sport that we have right across our sports is something that's very hard to measure, but it's invaluable to a successful society and keeps our young people engaged with each other and keeps them healthy as well. And you look at the GAA, you know, I always think if you had your perfect sporting structure, the GAA have it when you go from the parish to the county and on to Ulster, and that rivalry that you get between them. When I was involved in the Ulster Unionist Party, I think Tyrone had got through to the All-Ireland final, And so I said, right, we'll put out a press release that we were, you know, stand up for the Ulster men and support the Tyrone GAA team. Mm. And then within an hour, the word came back to me that I'd alienated all the Down supporters because of the rivalry between Tyrone and Down.
Yeah.
It was only that joke,
sure,
obviously. But our engagement, you know, Danny Murphy of the GAA, who's a lovely man, and he said, I want all the people of Down to support Down. And in that simple ask, a lot of people will respond to it positively, and they have a tremendous sense of community. And I say, just grow that sense of community to those who previously felt alienated from your sport. And if you're looking to how to build a successful society, the work that the Northern Ireland football fans have done has been fantastic. They challenged themselves. They said, we're getting it wrong here. We need to change and make Northern Ireland football a football association for everybody. And they went from 16 supporters clubs to 60. They went from crowds of 5,000 at World Cup qualifiers to now you can't get a ticket. And even the gesture when a young Northern Ireland fan was killed in the Euros, but the gesture by the Republic of Ireland fans actually just changed the relationship between them. And
I remember it.
So you should never underestimate the importance of small gestures, and that small gesture actually made a huge difference and was very much appreciated by the Northern Ireland football fans. So
it's just common decency, really, you know.
Well, it is common decency, but it's
symbolically important.
It's symbolically important, and the two of them then were acknowledged as the best group of fans at the at the Euros. So,
do you miss playing rugby?
I do miss it. I think I played my last game when I was 50.
Right.
And
was it for Ballymena or Queens?
Well,
or
I stopped the serious stuff when I was about 28, and then I was brought back at Ballymena by the Ballymena Six. The captain asked me to come back, and I'd given up because of a slightly bad hip.
Yeah.
And so the Ulster branch wouldn't let me play anywhere outside of scrum half. And as somebody who played in the wing, to actually be the person who gets the ball first was just brilliant.
A joy, yeah. Get your all the touches.
And I remember the first match, there was some young Donegal, 18-year-old Donegal forward standing nose to nose with me, and our 50-year-old prop ran up with no teeth, and he looked at the young fella and he looked at me, and he looked at the young fella again. He said, "Son," he said, "if you're trying to make a name for yourself, you're too late." and ran on. And but the fun you had playing even that standard of rugby, just with guys who knew what to do, couldn't do it anymore.
Yeah.
We had the best of crack.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And
50. The calves and the hamstrings were hanging on, were they?
Well, it sort of finished with my hamstring not hanging on.
Right.
And as I was carried into the house, my wife just looked at me and I got absolutely no sympathy.
You're stupid. You deserve everything you got.
When I stood for election, the one benefit that came out of it was that for 6 weeks, my wife had to say something nice about me. And but she's been very supportive over the years. That's very important.
Yeah. Well, listen, it's great to catch up and chat with you. We had a really good conversation the last time where we talked more about your career, really, and it was incredible stuff, really. I hadn't fully appreciated even things like your father. You got your two tickets for family from the IRFU, and your father, RUC officer, really only sat in those seats once because for security reasons and not wanting to set a routine, he had to keep moving around the stadium so he wouldn't be targeted. So people can check out that interview still on YouTube if they want to hear it. But that was kind of an extraordinary thing, really. Would you have been worried about him playing a match? Was it ever on your mind in a game?
No, you got to live with it, so you didn't worry about it.
Yeah.
And as I said, you know, my father travelled right across the island, and he was well received everywhere he went.
Yeah.
But those were not easy times.
No.
Being a police officer.
Well, you mentioned, and it's a surreal thing for someone of my generation or people down here to kind of think about, but your father was checking under the car on literally a daily basis before he went off to work.
If you think of your listeners and viewers, if you want to see what it was like to be a police officer during those times, then for one day, from the moment you wake up to the moment you go to bed, you're under threat. And you check under your car, you don't open the door until you know who's on the other side of it. And then think of doing that for 30 years. And so we certainly don't want to go back to those times. No. And I think to the young people, it's your future. We've sort of created a space both in Northern Ireland, across this island, to make sure what happened never happens again. And it's really for them to take the ball and run with it and base it around just building good relations. Mm. And whether there's constitutional change or not, that'll take care of itself, but it'll take care of people who have a better relationship and be better friends. Mm. And as the young girl from Cork said, you know, friendship is bigger than borders. Mm. And don't let people box you into very simplistic aspects of identity or politics. Recognize that we're all, we have a feast of identities or a feast of personalities that we can pick and choose between.
Yes, yes. As I remember it, you sang all three anthems at Croke Park on that day.
That's right, Joe. Well remembered, yeah. And it to me symbolized everything coming together and the way things should have been and the way things could be. And there's absolutely no reason why we can't make sure that that's the future that we have on this island.
Yeah.
And because that's what we as a people, I think, truly are capable of. And stand up to the extremes. Mm. Don't let them hold you back from building those relationships. And it's actually the challenge. If you think of those young people that came onto the pitch with us in the peace match, The challenge is how do you make sure what happened to them never happens to future generations? And if it's standing for an anthem or if it's just showing respect to somebody, then it's worth doing.
Mm. I think respect is the word, really, isn't it?
It is.
Listen, it's great to catch up with you in studio.
Thanks so much, Joe.
Trevor Ringland, you've been listening to, who obviously played for Ireland in the 80s and is a British and Irish line, and is here today in his capacity as president of the Irish Universities Rugby Union, sponsored and supported by Maxol for the last 28 years, and I presume into the future as well. Trevor Ringland, thanks very much.
Thanks very much, Joe.
That was an Off the Ball Podcast Network presentation.